Welcome to Nevada Newsmakers. On the broadcast today, Ray Hager and I speak with State Senator Scott Hammond, plus Randy Thompson on business. It's all coming up next on an all-new Nevada Newsmakers.
After the elimination of solar net metering in 2015, more than 2,000 workers were forced to find solar installation jobs in other states. Now, we have a chance to help put Nevadans back to work. Assembly Bill 405 would send a signal that Nevada is open for business. Don't let the clock run out on solar jobs. Visit yeson405.com. Paid for by the Alliance for Solar Choice.
Hi, my name's Marilyn Miner, and I'm sure you'd agree that Nevada's a very special place to live. I was born here, and my husband and I have raised our family here. I feel it's a privilege to live and work in the Truckee Meadows. I especially enjoy helping my clients reach their real estate goals. Sometimes the smallest details provide the greatest satisfaction. I'd be complimented to talk to you about your next move.
Call Marilyn Miner at Dixon Realty, 742-1280, or log on to marilynminer.com.
The signs and symptoms of cataracts can start out small with subtle changes in your vision. So don't wait. Be proactive and take your vision into your own hands. If you're experiencing the onset of cataracts or just have questions, contact your eye care professional or call Eye Care Associates of Nevada today. Dr. Hiss has years of experience specializing in the surgical correction of eye disorders and has completed over 84,000 vision-correcting procedures. At Eye Care Associates of Nevada, we'll change the way you look at the world.
Nevada Newsmakers coverage of the 2017 legislative session is brought to you by Pro Group Management, the Nevada Trucking Association, the Nevada Franchised Auto Dealers Association, and the Retail Association of Nevada.
This is Nevada Newsmakers with host Sam Chan, a no-holds-barred political forum. Now, from the Nevada Newsmakers broadcast headquarters, here is Sam Chan.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we are pleased to welcome back to the program State Senator Scott Hammond. Pleased to have you back on the program, sir.
Thank you for having me today.
Let's talk about autonomous trucks and cars for a little bit, if we can. You know, there's been hearings on this topic. Do you think that we're going to come to a time in the next 10 to 15 years where we're going to see separate roads for autonomous vehicles versus personal vehicles just because the technology is not there to have the two at the same time?
Well, that's a very interesting concept. This is the first time that anybody's ever mentioned separate roads. To me, I mean, it may have come up in a committee hearing. The whole concept actually goes back to 2011. It was my freshman year. I was in the assembly, and they brought that bill to our attention and asked if we would consider having a separate license for somebody who, well, not for who, but a separate license for a vehicle that was autonomous. And so that got a lot of national attention. I remember that because I was, after the session, I was up in Alaska picking up my daughter who we had just adopted. And I got a call from a Canadian radio host who asked me if I can, you know, do an interview with her on a certain date, and I did, and they were very interested in the whole concept of this autonomous vehicle. That my, I guess my point here is that was 2011, and so back then we were just talking about how do we go continue to do any development in this area. How do we do that? You had to have a license. You had to have a place where you were allowed to conduct these experiments and enable them, Google and anybody else who was trying to innovate a sort of canvas, if you will. And that was only 2011. Now you're talking about, you know, that was before we knew we were going to have what kind of vehicles we were going to have. We didn't know that eventually we're going to have, you know, semi trucks be autonomous, that you can put them so close together, you can call them a train. These are all new, you know, words in our lexicon that we're using, train, a semi-train, that now we're talking about having separate roads until we get to that point where we feel comfortable having them on the road. The reality is most of our planes, when they go up in the air, even though they have pilots in the cockpit, most of them are flying on automatic pilot. At least that's to my knowledge. That may not be completely true, but there are several instances where a plane is an autopilot. And that's kind of what you're going to get with an autonomous vehicle. You may not always have somebody missing. They'll be in the driver's seat or close to it. They just may not have their hands on the wheel. So I'm not sure if we're going to get to the point where we have to have separate roads. the cost might be too prohibitive, but certainly we may not be at that comfort level where we're saying they have to be completely and fully automatic or autonomous without any, you know, human present.
Because one of the problems has been that the autonomous vehicles are not able to react. For example, if somebody steps out into the street, or somebody slows down dramatically, or speeds up dramatically, cuts in front, all the normal human things that humans are used to dealing with, autonomous vehicles are not ready to deal with that yet.
And because we're just having a conversation, I'll tell you that I don't know if we're I don't know if we want to spend the money to have an infrastructure that includes more roads just for autonomous vehicles, whereas because technology changes so quick, do you just wait until the technology catches up to the point where they are safe crossing the street, or they are safe doing, you know, the routine stops that we as humans are you know, programmed to do as we're driving, right? We're programmed to look to the right and left. And if we see kids playing with a ball, we slow down because we thought we might see the ball come kicking out into the street, you know, those kinds of things. Maybe you have to wait for that technology to get there, but I'm not sure if I want to go and create a whole infrastructure. It costs a lot of money to put, you know, additional roads out there. So maybe you just wait until the technology catches up, and that might be faster than, you know, putting the infrastructure out there.
Do you think 5, 10 years, 15 years down the road?
Well, that's a good question. I haven't thought about it too much. I wouldn't be surprised, you know. We waited a long time for somebody to put a jetpack on somebody and then, you know, fly them around. It just never happened, right? But now we're at the point where we're talking 5 years ago, we're going to study autonomous vehicles a little bit more. 2 years ago, the governor was one of the first ones to get into an autonomous vehicle and actually drive around the Vegas Valley. So it's interesting how fast we're moving. So yeah, 10, 15 years, I would not be surprised.
Senator, I have a transportation question, but from another angle, and it's about Democratic Senator Mark Menendo. He recently resigned as the chair of the Senate Transportation Committee after a second allegation of sexual harassment this session at the legislature. These allegations have come up before in 2009 and 2003. Do you think his resignation is enough?
Well, I think that it's a step that was necessary because a lot of people have been questioning whether or not if these allegations are true, whether or not they've been enabling this behavior to continue going. So I think it was a necessary first step. I hate to see it. I've been working with the senator for 2 years now on a lot of legislation that is very important to the Southern Nevada area, light rail enabling legislation, public-private partnerships, and those kinds of things that are really going to be great for the area. So I hated to see this happen, but I also understand that these allegations are serious and that they're investigating it. So in my mind, it was a good first step, but I think the necessary part is really finding out or waiting to hear from the investigation and what the investigation concludes, and then we'll go from there.
Okay. I wanted to change the subject again on you, and you were known for maybe the key champion of the education savings account. It was your bill that was passed last session. And of course, this is the big issue again this session. Now, Treasurer Dan Swartz told me that Governor Sandoval would go to the mattresses for the ESAs in the final days of the legislature, which we're in now, and said that he expected the governor to veto any budget that did not have the ESAs included in it. What is your sense? How committed do you think Governor Sandoval is into the passage of the ESAs?
So, not knowing the complete lexicon for going to the mattresses, I'm assuming that means that you're going all the way out. And so, if that is the way that you would interpret it, that you're not giving in, you dug your heels in, then I would agree with that assessment. The governor has assured me, and not only in person, but through his actions, he's assured me, and that has been reconfirmed time and time again during the session, that we're not getting out of this place. We're not getting out of Carson until we get this done, until the ESAs are in statute and being funded. Because right now, the Supreme Court has determined that they are constitutional. That the program itself is constitutional. So what the governor is assuring is that we're going to be funding them. We're not leaving until that happens. And I have no reason to suspect that that is an untrue statement. I think he is in all the way.
All right, more with Senator Hammond when we come back.
Nearly 200,000 Nevadans work in retail businesses, supporting families and the community. Nevada's retail businesses generated over $2 billion in sales tax revenue in 1 year, including nearly $700 million to help our schools. Shop around and see all that Nevada's retailers offer our state.
We're the Retail Association of Nevada, representing thousands of Nevada businesses.
Businesses that work for Nevada.
Your business workers' comp company should be your partner. The Pro Group customer care team brings you effective risk management training, support, and web tools at no extra cost to you. We maximize the safety of your employees and business every day. Pro Group is with you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, with information and resources at your fingertips. We ensure your employees' safety and that your premium's in line. When you're a Pro Group member, you have the team that's looking out for you. Pro Group Management, workers' comp that works for you. Call for a no-obligation quote today.
This is Nevada Newsmakers.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we continue our conversation with Chairman of the Transportation Committee in the Senate, Scott Hammond.
Senator, back to the ESAs. Have you had any conversations within the GOP Senate caucus about not voting for a budget if it does not include the ESAs in it?
Well, thank you for the question, Ray. Yes, we've had those conversations. Again, what you're seeing coalescing in the Assembly Republican caucus as well, also is happening in the Senate Republican caucus. We're coalescing and really backing each other up and backing the governor up. And the governor, as you mentioned just a few minutes ago in your previous question, going back to the, he's taking it to the mattress or going to the mattresses. I believe that that's exactly what you're getting out of the state Republican Senate caucus as well. There's a determination from each one of them that we're not going out of this place. We're not leaving Carson City without an ESA and a funding for an ESA.
Treasurer Swartz also said that the money allocated to ESAs in the governor's budget was about half of what would cover only half of the people who have applied for it already. How much money would you like to see go into this during the first biennium?
Well, I'm not saying that, again, a good question. I'm not saying that the treasurer is misspeaking because, there's a difference because there's those who have applied and those who have gone through and actually finish the application process. And of those who have finished the application process, the $25 million we're allocating in the first year would be sufficient, more than sufficient. And then the $35 million in the second part of the biennium would be sufficient to include more in. Obviously, we're not going to be able to get the whole 8,000 to 10,000 that have applied. But again, we're looking at those who have finished the application process. And so far, we're not going to be turning around. We're not going to be turning away too many of those once we get it all done. So it looks like we've got enough to get the program really up and running.
I wanted to talk to you about drones because that's becoming a bigger and bigger industry in this state. But there appears to be a lot of questions coming up that one really hadn't looked at in the big picture, but in the smaller picture. For example, privacy issues, ownership issues. For example, if a drone lands in your backyard, what is your responsibility? Do you have to give it back to the person like a football? Or are you able to keep it? Are you able to look at the video that was taken to make sure that your privacy has not been looked at? What are your thoughts on some of these issues that have come up around drones?
Actually, it is an excellent point. I have a bill that's sitting in Senate Finance dealing with UAVs, and in particular about situations where UAV has come into contact. Right now, we have a system where if two cars collide and we have a crash, then we have a system where somebody in a tow truck comes and picks it up because it's a third party that comes in and removes that. We don't have anything for that in case a drone goes down in your backyard, hits your house, or one hits another drone. And so we had to have who comes in and cleans it up. I mean, there's material that needs to be, addressed because it could be harmful to the environment once that gets out. And then it also addresses the, so if it does go down in your backyard, do you have to call the authorities? And then the authorities come, and then who looks at and ascertains who it belongs to, and how far can they go in order to ascertain ownership? Can they, if there is a video feed, can they go in? Can they go into the CPU unit? Can they go in and look at that kind of stuff? Is it any of that stuff admissible in case there's any suspicion of foul play? So the bill deals with that, and I've dealt with attorney, or I've dealt with lawyers on both sides of an issue, saying, okay, this is where we feel like it should go and not go. So these are issues, serious issues, and we're trying to iron them out before the industry really takes off.
All right, to pardon the pun. And that's where we have to leave it. Thank you so much for taking the time on a very busy day at the legislature. We appreciate it, Senator.
Thank you for having me.
And we'll be right back.
Early in the morning or throughout the night, professional truck drivers are on the job, serving you, safely moving freight that's crucial to our economy. From the oldest industries to our newest innovators, from the exotic to the everyday, trucks are everywhere, moving everything. Never afraid to embrace a future that makes Nevada and our nation stronger. Trucking moves America forward.
How do you shed some light on a better economy? Start with growth inspired by Valley Electric Association. We're a member-owned power company that puts Nevada first, and we're doing big things, like providing prosperity by securing renewable energy projects. For Nevada, that means more jobs and more opportunities, all for a strong statewide economy. In other words, together, we're doing powerful things. Visit us at vea.coop to learn more.
Nevada Newsmakers coverage of the 2017 legislative session is brought to you by Pro Group Management, the Nevada Trucking Association, the Nevada Franchised Auto Dealers Association, and the Retail Association of Nevada.
And now, back to Nevada Newsmakers with Sam Shad.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we're always pleased to welcome back our political analyst, Randy Thompson, today in her guise as state director of NFIB, which is the National Federation of Independent Business. So how is this session going so far for business?
Oh, gosh, I thought 2015 was crappy. This one's even worse, it seems like.
Well, I mean, a lot of things got pushed by on the Republican side when they had control. So I would have thought that 2015 would have been a better session.
No, you would think so, but we didn't fix overtime. We didn't fix, that was a big one for overtime was a big one for us. But and then we got the commerce tax instead. So it was not a great year for small business, or for any business, I should say, of any size in this state.
What are you looking at in this session as we wind down towards the end as the most important bills for NFIB?
Well, the two big ones right now are paid leave and minimum wage increase. We've got a couple of options there. There's a Senate Joint Resolution 6, which would increase minimum wage, but that has to pass the legislature this session as well as next session, and then it goes to the voters in 2020. And it's a great way to drive people to the ballot box, so that's why the Democrats like to put these kind of things on the ballot box. The trouble really with that, I don't mind having to wait till 2021 for it to be implemented, because it'll start at $9 an hour, which is only 75 cents more than where we are now. So chances are, by the time we get to 2021, minimum wage will probably be $9 an hour. The real concern we have that is that it has a triple damages aspect to it, that if any employer violates the statute of minimum wage, that an employee is awarded triple damages. And to put that kind of stuff in our Constitution is really an issue, let alone the fact that it's a triple damage. But that's kind of one of the concerns we have, is the how far that is going.
And the problem with that is that you can't fix it. If you come along and there are things that you need to fix down the road, it has to go through that entire process again.
Right. So we're hoping to at least get that part struck out before it goes further.
And that would be the biggest concern, because, you know, minimum wage is going to be above whatever it's being set at, just because right now, talk to anybody in Northern Nevada and they are scrambling for business, to get employees.
Right.
And the same thing in Southern Nevada. And it's only going to get worse with these multi-billion dollar projects coming on. Resorts World is finally getting off the ground in Las Vegas in a big way. They'll be hiring thousands of workers down there. And you've got expansions. The folks here at Grand Sierra The Morello Group just purchased SLS on the Strip, and they're thrilled to have done that. And if they do what they did in Northern Nevada, they're going to spend a ton of money improving that property as well.
Well, and because of the Teslas and the Panasonics and the Apples and the Switches, right now wages have come up. And Google, that's right. And the don't know what we're doing with the land, but gee, it looks perfect for autonomous driving cars. But wages are coming up. I mean, most small business guys are starting their people out at $10, $11, $12. They have to. 4% of our population gets paid minimum wage, and most of that is people that are just starting out in high school, trying to earn some beer money and some gas money. So we've got to look at the minimum wage, and I kind of called out Senator Ford on this the other day at the hearing. Minimum wage is not a living wage. It was never meant to be a living wage. And for the left to continually say minimum wage is not a living wage is correct. It's not a living wage. It is a starter wage. It's a training wage. Most of the folks that start at minimum wage, within 3 to 6 months, they're making more than that. And if they're not, then there's an issue. And let's go back to why there's so many people on minimum wage. It's our educational system. If we had a better educational system and kids are better prepared for jobs, they're not going to be stuck at a minimum wage job.
You talked about beer and wine. Those are two topics near and dear to your heart.
They are, yes.
So where are we at this point? Because it seems like, especially with the beer, it's gone backwards and forwards.
No, AB 431 has passed the assembly, and it'll allow for the local brew pubs to be able to brew more beer. And more critical, it'd be able them to actually sell direct at farmers markets and special events. There was also an addition that I got added on for the Nevada Wine Coalition to allow for wineries to actually have essentially a cooperative ownership. So it helps some small businesses get going. But yeah, we're really thrilled with AB 431. It's going to help our local brew pubs, which has just taken off. And it's talk about hiring. I mean, they're between the growing of the hops and the making of the beer and the selling it, it's really taken off. Both Reno and Vegas are taken off as craft brewers.
Have you been surprised by the distributor's willingness to negotiate on this?
I think they had to. I think the point is being made is this is where jobs are being created. And selling more Coors in the state is not going to create jobs, but allowing Great Basin to expand does. So that, and then frankly, they're a little on the greedy side with trying to sell pot. They are the ones now that it's only liquor distributors that can get the pot licenses to distribute pot. So I think the legislature said, distributors, you guys are getting a little on the greedy side. So that did kind of backlash to them.
Well, and that was interesting because they all wanted in. In fact, that was a negotiating point. They were planning to run a $2 million campaign against recreational marijuana if they weren't allowed in to be part of the three-tier system, which is only for recreational marijuana, not medical marijuana. Mm-hmm. But because they have federal licenses, a lot of the larger distributors are not able to do this. And Sam McMullen is leading the charge for the smaller distributors that are willing to take the risk.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know how they're going to bank their money. That's the challenge, because you've got, when you're a distributor for liquor, you do have a federal license. And they have told folks that have federal licenses, don't even get into pot. Gaming is getting the same direction. So yeah, you've only got some smaller guys that are willing to take on that risk now.
And it's a ridiculous situation. We have to resolve this in Nevada somehow. Maybe some kind of community bank. But to have people walking around with literally suitcases full of money to go pay their taxes, for example, is insanity.
Well, I worked on this for about almost 2 years with a group doing some cybersecurity, trying to develop essentially a software that would ensure that you could track the money. And the real issue is in private insurance. There's only one private insurance around the country that would actually be willing to take this on. And every state has this issue. So until Congress can tell the banks to relax some of their regulations, and Congress really does need to step in at some point and take some leadership on the banking side of it.
Don't you think the end result of all this is going to be for the legalization of marijuana is the federal government looking at how much money the states are making and putting towards education and other things and saying, you know what, this is ridiculous. We need to get in on this act.
Well, I don't know if you're ever going to see us deregulate pot. It's just too much money in law enforcement. I mean, there's a lot of people that get arrested for pot. I think it's more of a money game.
It's definitely a money game, but we'll see which side it falls on. Randy Thompson, always a pleasure. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
And we'll be right back.
After the elimination of solar net metering in 2015, more than 2,000 workers were forced to find solar installation jobs in other states. Now, we have a chance to help put Nevadans back to work. Assembly Bill 405 would send a signal that Nevada is open for business. Don't let the clock run out on solar jobs. Visit yesonon405.com. Paid for by the Alliance for Solar Choice.
Sully's Sports Bar inside the Tamarack Junction is South Reno's headquarters for locals to watch all your favorite sports. And now you can enjoy your favorite team on our brand new high-def TVs featuring the Papa, the big daddy of them all. It's our giant 17-foot big screen TV wall. And we have two 79-inch high-def TVs, 12 65-inch high-def TVs, including two party booths for your own private party, and six high-def private booth TVs. Bring in your own headphones and listen to your favorite game right from your own seat. First, make your bets in our William Hill Sportsbook, then enjoy your favorite cold beer, libations, burgers, wings, pizza, and our signature Build Your Own Bloody Mary bar. Then settle in and download our app and listen to any game being shown in Sully's Sports Bar. Catch your favorite team on our new high-def big-screen TVs. Sully's Sports Bar is the only place to watch your favorite sports all year long. The Tamarack Junction, just north of the Summit Mall in South Virginia.
It's Tamarack Junction, your junction for fun.
St. Ives Florist, for every holiday and every special occasion. For romance. Custom home design. We have the largest selection of fresh flowers in Northern Nevada. And we also offer a large selection of unique gift items. Come see me, Lori Ann, at St. Ives Florist, 700 South Wells Avenue, or call me at 333-9190.
On our next broadcast, cybersecurity expert Ira Victor. It's a great show. We'll see you then.